Welcome into another edition of the Varsity Podcast. We are coming to you in a week 7. Justin Barney, Sponge Franklin, and Sponge, man, it is flying along. I cannot believe we're already talking playoff positioning and rankings points and everything. It's moving.
Yeah, you know how this time of the year, like we just said, it gets once it gets started, it gets rolling, man, and it just goes by super fast. I mean, you think about, you know, week 4 or 5 in college and the NFL, and it's just high school is the same way. It's just always 1 week ahead, and once that train gets moving, it's going.
It's moving, man. It is clicking, and it's just so hard to imagine that we are so far into the regular season already. You know, playoff rankings points have come out, and it's just been a fast ride. As we always do, we look back before we look ahead. Some good ones out of week 6, some ones we want to cover real quick. Bartram Trail whipped up on Fleming Island. Didn't see that big of a route coming, 49-28. Creekside, a big win over Oakleaf, the battle of the Knights. Creekside handles Oakleaf, second loss in a row for Oakleaf, 38-20 for Creekside. A good game for Sean McIntyre, the Knights. A big upset to me, Providence 17, University Christian 14. That's a district game, so puts UC at a disadvantage of winning the district title. And then Range 26, Riverside 24, a little bit of a disputed ending down there with the clock management and stuff. But let's cover those ones quickly, Sponge. What was your biggest surprise last week out of those four games?
I'll go first off, that Range Riverside was an instant classic, back and forth. You know, north side versus west side. Both teams were exchanging big blows. Riverside got the big touchdown late with Gelsey with 2 minutes to go, thinking they're going to win the game. And all Reigns does is go right down the field. And then, yeah, there was a lot of I wasn't there for it, but I saw it on, you know, yeah, Twitter. You know, was there time left on the clock? Did they have timeouts, this, that, and the other? They get to run a couple plays down there. Reigns gets in the end zone, ends up winning, you know, at the buzzer to walk it off. You know, so just a wild finish there. But both teams played good. But, yeah, a little bit of contro at the end of that one.
Yeah, you know, and I saw tweets and stuff about Riverside parents saying they were going to protest the official ending and stuff. And, again, it doesn't matter if you protest the game or not. I've seen this 100 times in the past. FHA can do nothing. They can say, yeah, there was an error made. But, you know, the ruling on the field is final. So whether or not it was a slow spot or the clock operator didn't start the time quick enough, I think that was the decision to allow Reigns one more play. Riverside takes the L in that process at the backyard, 26-24. But a good one for Riverside, and really some muscle showed from Reigns. Reigns' offense has not been exceptional this year. They failed to score over 27 in a game. But, again, Reigns continues to find ways to get it done, and that was another way to get it done at the backyard last Friday night. So big one for Donovan Maslin and the Vikings. Their only loss is to Daytona Beach Mainland. So they are moving along. Not a bad loss for Riverside. I still think they're a pretty solid number, top 4 seed in the region in Class 2M. So, again, a great win there, a gateway game. Bartram Trail over Fleming Island. You surprised at that one?
I mean, we talked about Bartram, and we talked about Fleming the last couple weeks. You know, they were we liked what they had at quarterback with Sebastian. We liked some of their young skill guys over at Fleming. Brand-new coach. Chad Parker's going back, you know, playing against Bartram. And, you know, Bartram, I think getting Riley back at quarterback has definitely been a huge asset to that offense, and I think it's – you know, made them more explosive. So I'm not necessarily surprised by them winning, but maybe by the margin of victory.
Yeah, 21.
Because Fleming's going to score with their offense because that's basically he's an offensive-minded coach over there at Fleming Island. So, you know, but I feel like with them getting their offense back in tune, with getting their parts back, like with Riley at quarterback and Latham Biddle, we know he could tote it. So 49-28, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a stretch margin, but, you know, I guess – with a first-year coach at Fleming, you kind of, you know, nothing is to be expected where, you know, something like that could happen.
Yeah, and, you know, and you're looking at teams like Fleming and Oakleaf who came into the season with pretty high expectations, new coaches. Oakleaf a 2-0 start, Fleming a good start as well. And then you have losing streaks, Fleming riding a 3-game skid, and Oakleaf after a loss to Creekside riding a 2-game skid. Your district hopes are pretty much gone out the window. Where you sit in the playoff ratings points, not looking good at this point to get into the postseason. So now you just got to concentrate on finishing strong. Creekside, the big win over Oakleaf, and you know, that Mandarin win really catapulted them. And you see that in the playoff ratings points. They're going to probably make the postseason. Probably not as district champ. I think Buchholz probably still the headliner there.
Yeah.
But again, Creekside, a big district win last week. And if you're Sean McIntyre tonight, you got something figured out.
Yeah, no, definitely. We talked about them upset against Mandarin, and they had some big turnovers in that game. They were able to run the ball on Mandarin, and then they kind of, like you said, catapulted over to the Oak Leaf game, where Oak Leaf was, you know, one of those teams where they started off, you know, slow but hot because they just didn't have as many games, you know, because they had the hurricane and they were only played like one game week one and they were off. They ended up going 2-0, so you're like, okay, this team's, you know, got something going with Foy. And then they kind of had some tough games coming up. You know, they had to play Bowles, and Bowles kind of was finding themselves, and they kind of found themselves in that game. So Creekside, we talked about them all year. Like, they've been an offensive kind of like power. You know, defensively had been struggling. They've gotten to a couple shootout wins and losses. So just as them playing as the season goes on, you know, they kind of caught Oak Leaf, I think, at the right time. They were where Creekside's kind of peaking, and Oak Leaf's kind of like, okay, we're licking their wounds off of getting their first loss against Bowles. And, you know, Creekside, two big wins back-to-back for sure.
Back-to-back. And, you know, really the only game that they – this season kind of took it on the chin, and it wasn't really in that competitive game in the fourth quarter, was up in the Border Classic against Richmond Hill. And you know, every game this season, I mean, Palm Beach Central right out of the game, they were state semifinals last year, and Creekside stood toe-to-toe with them. The Mandarin win was huge. So they have been doing it week after week, and you're finally starting to get something out of your defense. That Mandarin game was won by its defense. So the maligned Creekside defense, which has been giving up points and points and points, have finally gotten away to slow team down. And that offense, we knew it was continue to get better. Harrison Garrido and Sean Ashenfeld are getting it done under center and in the backfield there for the night. So they are moving along. And the last one from last week, the big upset to me, Providence.
Upset City.
Providence, man, over UC. I was at that game. UC was up 14-0 in the first half. And Providence just reeled them in. It's the second or third time I've seen Providence this year, and they are good. The thing with Providence to me is just they're young, and as with all smaller schools, you don't have a lot of depth there to you.
Yeah.
But they've won five in a row. Their only loss was to Fernandina Beach by a point in week one.
Yeah.
Maurice Williams, former Jaguars offensive tackle. A lot of Jaguars, former Jaguars on that staff over at Providence, and they've got some players. And I was interested to see how they would do against UC. I honestly thought UC would roll Providence.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like you think about, you know, we like think about the past two, three seasons and who's been where. And UC's been a constant, one of the top teams in the area. You know, they got some playmakers over there. So, you know, Providence, they kind of went by the wayside a little bit. You know, they were good several years ago, but kind of like in the mix where they just kind of like weren't very viable and very, you know, very good. And so you know that they were building something, obviously, with Coach Williams. And, you know, you're thinking same old same. You know, UC will kind of just go in and do business and, you know, come out of there with a big win. And it was very much the opposite on that one.
Yeah.
I was like, say, I was shocked looking at the number. I'm like 14-0. I'm like, all right, it's a little low scoring, but they're up by two touchdowns. And the next thing you know, it's 14-7 and then 14-all, and then boom.
Crazy, unbelievable game. Mason Williams, quarterback, I thought had an exceptional game. He had a touchdown run in that game to get Providence on the board early in the second half. Great opening drive. Had a big run that set up a field goal in the fourth quarter of that game to get him within 14-10 and then threw the game-winning touchdown, which is crazy because UC punted the ball back to the 9. It's a 91-yard game-winning drive for Providence and Mason Williams. Just unbelievable. He's an underclassman. That team is good. The number ones are good. I mean, Jet Hood is good. Mason Williams is good. You got Mr. Haywood over there playing a little bit on both sides of the ball. He is good. So Providence has got a good team. I'm looking forward to seeing them next year. I think next year is going to be a sensational year for Providence. We talk about their baseball team and their basketball team, but man, their football team this year. You know, they had that little run, as you mentioned. They had the runs where they're slugging with Trinities.
Yeah.
And, you know, Paul Peterson was a coach there and did well. And they had a little flash of time, but weren't able to sustain that. Again, a smaller private school and enrollment down and everything. So, but Providence, a huge win. That's their biggest win in quite some time. First win ever UC since 2014. So good for Coach Maurice Williams and the Stallions. Big building block there. A couple others to touch on from last week. Trinity 19-13 over Rockledge, and then Lake Mary 34-16 over Mandarin. And Mandarin struggled with turnovers again in that loss, and that's a bad one for them.
It is. You cannot turn the ball over, and they did it again. And, you know, going back, we were talking about, okay, let me check out Lake Mary. They're 4-0 on the year. And I didn't realize that they had a hotshot quarterback that I knew from the Orlando area. The kid Noah Grubbs is a 2026. He's one of the top quarterbacks in the country. He's got, you know, 12 to 15 plus Power Five offers, big boy offers from anywhere from Notre Dame to Miami to Penn State to whoever. And they actually did a decent job. He didn't really rip them up, you know, throwing the ball, but he did. He was efficient and decent. But, you know, Lake Mary had over 200 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns, and they, like I say, they forced some turnovers, got some turnovers, and, you know, Mandarin just couldn't get that offense clicking. And it just, I don't know, man, just you lose one, you know, to Creekside where you probably shouldn't have lost that game. You lose by a point, you get upset, so you're a little bit stunned, you're a little stung. And, you know, then you got to go on the road and play a good team. And so you kind of just got to you got to figure out what's going on, get what's wrong right, and, you know, clean up all those turnovers and penalties and all that type of stuff. You know, but that's a tough two-game back-to-back stretch
there.
Yeah,
and, you know, Lake Mary, that's going to be a team that you're going to have to see again in the playoffs.
That's the whole other thing, too. You know, so, you know, yeah, it's hard to beat a team twice, all that stuff. But at least you got to see them and you kind of know what you got to do to beat them. But forget about all that right now. You get right and win these next couple. I know they got a couple easy ones right mm-hmm. here to kind of get things, you know, under control and get back on the winning side. But, yeah, tough two-game losing streak
for
the Mustangs.
Yeah, big time tough for them. Last one, Trinity Christian, 19-13 over Rockledge. And Trinity, to me, just has not been in sync this year. They've not been in sync.
Yeah, it's been a little struggle on the offense, you know, and you would think – that, okay, you've got, you know, Colin at quarterback, LSU commit. You got some pretty studly receivers with Miles and Kyle and, you know, even some of those other cats, Nico and London Smith. You know, you got Darnell at running back. He's been a little banged up, which is not a good thing because, you know, after that, you kind of got some new guys that you're working in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're having to put Cam back there at running back, which he's a monster now. But he's also, like, one of your best defensive guys, so – you know, running both ways, you know, wearing you out, you know, depth-wise, all that stuff, you know, you don't have to rely on that too much. But, I mean, he was pretty much the game saver in that game with the big 58-yard run in the third quarter that, you know, helped put them in the lead. But it was a wild finish in that game. You know, they go down, they take the lead 13-7, miss the extra point. So you're like, okay, great. Now you're going to come out, you're going to end up losing this game 14-13. Rockledge ends up going down scores. They get the extra point block. So you're like, all right, well, you're in business. So it's 13-all. Then they get it. The Trinity's got the ball at their own end down there, and Kyle had been punting all night, and he was doing, like, rugby style, holding it. And I don't know if Rockledge just said, you know what, we're going to go after this. When they end up blocking the kick, the punt at their own, they got the ball at the 10 going in. So you're like, literally, like, Trinity's about to blow this game. They're about to lose it. They somehow get a stop. They block another field goal. Then they end up going to overtime, you know. So then in overtime, you know, they ended up getting they stopped Rockledge from getting in. They went for it on fourth down, got the stop, and then Cam, you know, had a 6-yard touchdown run to win it. But it was just going back to the offense, you know, it all starts, like we said last week, about all levels of football, protecting the quarterback, creating those running lanes, and the offensive line struggling. So Collins under pressure immediately, you know, he's throwing tight windows, and they're not able to establish a run like they want to. They're not able to get guys, you know, open like they want to. They're not able to get balls out quick. And so that offense, like I say, has just been kind of out of sync
mm-hmm.
all year. And so, like I say, they got to figure some stuff out. You know, they got a big one with Riverside Friday night, and then, you know, then they got the two district games with UC and Providence down the stretch. But definitely not – the clicking yeah. offense and high-powered running and gunning like they have been.
Yeah, not like we're used to seeing. So that was a pretty,
they're winning ugly right now.
Yeah,
which
hey,
I mean, and that's the thing. The name of the game is winning ball games. Get out of there with a win, all that good stuff. But yeah, it's definitely not been the prettiest.
Yeah, it's not been a traditional Trinity kind of start. So interesting week 6 as we turn the page to week 7. Before we do, we have our Super 10. Some changes this week for me. I had a tough time on this number 10 spot for me. I'm gonna put in Swanee this week at number 10. I know they're right on the fringe of our coverage area. They're undefeated. Had some other contenders. You know, I think Riverside is in the conversation. I think even maybe on the fringe of that, maybe even a Clay is on the conversation. At some point, Palatka would have been in the conversation, but they lost to Coy Creek. But I'm going to go with Beachside. Beachside's another one, but again, you're not playing, right. You're independent, you're not playing those big teams. They're having a good season, maybe in the conversation a little bit later. Providence, maybe a little bit later, big win over UC. But I'm going to go with Swanee this week at number 10 in my Super 10. Number 9, I've got Creekside. I probably should have had Creekside in last week. They demolished Oak Leaf. I've got them at number 9. I've got Rain staying put at number 8 after sneaking out of Riverside with a win. Offense still struggling a little bit, but doing what it needs. At number 7, I've got Trinity Christian. Still not totally impressed with Trinity Christian's offense. Number 6, I've got Ponte Vedra. Number 5, I've got Bowles staying put. I dropped Mandarin a spot with the loss, but I just couldn't put them behind Bowles.
Right,
yep. You know, I thought about putting Mandarin behind Bowles, and but they have that win over Bowles, a head-to-head. So Mandarin at number 4, Bartram at 3. They've got IMG this week, so I think Bartram's going to take an L there.
Yeah.
Number 2 and 1 unchanged, Bradford. Still looking unbelievable. And then St. Aug, third game in a row with their backup quarterback taking the dub, 49-9 over Kansas.
Like I say, I'm right there with you in that top 5, basically, top 6. I've got St. Aug at 1. They've been electric the last couple weeks with, like you say, the backup quarterback. Bradford's looking good. Defense is strong. Got them at 2. Bartram at 3. Definitely think they're going to lose to IMG. I put Mandarin at 4, too, because I'm like you. They beat Bowles already. You know, I guess we'll, you know, the Creekside loss definitely wasn't great. Lake Mary, okay. You know, 2 losses is not great, but still, you beat Bowles head-to-head, and that's why I kind of had Bowles right ahead of Trinity. You know, I've got Bowles at 5 and Trinity at 6 because, yes, Trinity's got a 4-2 record. Bowles is 3-3, but they beat you on the field. So I've got Reigns at 7, Ponte Vedra 8, Creekside 9. And I threw Riverside in there at 10. You know, I threw it because, like you said, we had a hard time. We talked about, like, who's kind of hanging out. Like, yes, Swanee's had a good season. Like you said, they're kind of out of our coverage area. But I feel like if Riverside was going to play some of these teams we're talking about in this 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 teams that were trying to get in that 10 spot, I like what Riverside has done of late. But guess what? They get to play Trinity Friday to prove themselves to win or lose, you know. So they'll either stay up in or they'll drop on out.
Yep. So another interesting thing this week that came out, Georgia High School Association, before we get into our Week 7 games, actually voted to adjust their bylaws and
NIL,
make it possible for high school athletes in Georgia, effective immediately, to start profiting off their name, image, and likeness. And this has been kind of a trend around the country. It's still coming. I think there's been 34 states in the District of Columbia that already have some NIL legislation in place. And Florida is not one of them yet. But after yesterday, the FHSA released a statement that said they've drafting NIL legislation, be presented at one of their upcoming board of directors meetings. Does not at all say this is happening.
Yeah, right, right. They're talking about it.
You have a new board in place, so we don't know how they're going to vote. The board appointed by Ron DeSantis. So you don't know how it's going to shake out there. But when Georgia does something, and they also in this thing yesterday, in the bylaws thing on Monday, they also, I mean, talk about two seismic changes in one day, split public and private playoffs in Class A to 3A. So two absolutely seismic changes in the Peach State. And, you know, Florida, the state of Florida, has been extremely behind the eight ball in terms of changes and being ahead of the curve and stuff, and whether it be with COVID or so many other regulations and rules. The state of Florida has been so far behind other states and, you know, not failed to change, and now the governor has gotten involved with things. So they've been really behind the eight ball in Georgia. And I've said it when I've talked to Robin Hines, executive director up there, that Georgia high schools have done things so much better, much cleaner than Florida. So they're a step ahead again, and now they're allowing high school athletes in Georgia to profit off the name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I'm a little bit split on it. And we have a high school football survey coming out this week where we ask players and coaches about NIL. And
I know exactly where the route that's going
to
take.
And, you know, it's interesting to me this year, players still said yes, they were in favor of it.
Right.
By about a 2-1 margin.
For sure.
But it dropped, actually, and the, you know, the passion that some of these players answered with when they said no was so much more detailed than the, you know, the kind of the authority when they, the kids saying, yes, we deserve that. Yes, we deserve it.
Right.
But the passion from a lot of players and a lot of coaches, really kind of almost say we need to play high school football for the right reason. Chasen
right.
Clark from Bradford was very passionate about, he said, we play high school football for the name on our chest.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
And I wish there was more kids like that too.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I'm mixed with it too, because I'm all for a kid to be able to profit off of what he's got going on. And if he's a stud and he's a star and he's marketable and all that stuff, you know, sure. But then again, too, it's like, we talk about, this is the biggest, you know, thing we've always talked about, the pay of the coaches in the state of Florida,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how minuscule it is. And so I think it's hard for a lot of coaches to be like, all right, yeah, we're basically doing this job for peanuts. Yeah, maybe we didn't make this kid into a star. He was already good and he's on our team, and you know, but for him to get like, you know, $500,000 deal or something, you know, to be like, this kid's making $500,000 and he's your quarterback or your star running back or your star DB, safety, whatever, and you know, you're making peanuts compared to that, to be like, then the parents and the player, you know, you're almost like, who's in charge here? Because you're like, how do you talk to a kid who's basically,
yeah, and that's
but again, that's where the gray area of like, you know, I'm all for that for the kid, and I think what it boils down to is, I don't think, you know, not every kid is going to get an NIL deal too.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so, you know, for sure, there's the top 100 players in the country, you know, so you're spread to, whereas like we talk about here just locally, like, you know, who are the top 5 players? Do we have any top 100s? Do we have
so
any?
Yeah, if you would look at ESPN top 300.
And we really don't.
You don't. You know? You would have maybe 5 kids.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I think a lot of coaches say the same thing. You're going to have the Grayson Howards and the
right.
Colin Hurleys and those guys.
Right.
You're going to be able to say, hey, yeah, I want something
yeah.
for this. And those guys are going to get the cash.
Right.
You know, we don't have the elite basketball players here anymore that we used to. A lot of those guys have taken the prep school route or Montverde or,
right.
you know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So basketball would be another one where you would have that possibility. You don't have those elite, you know, upper-level basketball guys here anymore. But, you know, those top 300 football players
right.
are going to be able to say, hey.
Yeah.
So NIL, I think when you look at it for high school kids, you know, in Georgia there's over 200,000 athletes in Georgia playing sports, and you look at, you know, a local issue here this past year, Ryan Frechette, a Bartram Trail girls lacrosse player. She's been our player of the year this year. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Back-to-back state champ. She was offered an NIL deal from a lacrosse equipment manufacturer. I mean, it wasn't going to be an exceptional amount. You know,
right.
you're talking very limited amount by, you know, it's not apples
yeah,
apples.
Right. Yeah, the standards for that is different. Yeah.
But you're looking at a young lady in high school being able to make something.
Right.
Whatever it may be,
yeah,
very,
that can even be her getting like gear
yeah,
and equipment,
exactly.
you know, all that stuff to just rep the brand of whoever this
yep.
particular company is, and you know, that's a cool thing, even if it's not in dollar value,
right?
You know, that's just a, you know, it's a cool thing that basically she could have been able to do, and then just to be able to market herself for when she does go to play whatever college she goes to play at lacrosse, she could build her brand, you know, there.
Right.
So that, like you say, that's where it's like, that's kind of a cool deal. And since we don't have that in place, she can't get that deal.
Right. So it's, you know, for players like that, I think for players, you even look at like Edward Waters. They had a former Rebolt women's basketball player there, and Laquanza Glover, and was able to get an NIL deal in college at Edward Waters. So you've just seen so many opportunities like that for female athletes. You know, the male athletes, you know, you're going to get – I mean, Matt Tobin, I've talked to him about this 100 times over the years. At Bowles, he was there when Tebow was there, and I was in St. Augustine when Tebow was there. And we've talked, you know, say, when Tebow was at Nice, I mean, how many times, you know, would a sports bar, you know, a Tim Tebow night or something
right.
like that,
right.
you could have him there, and you're building off his name and name, image, and likeness to do that. So,
right.
yeah, he absolutely should have been able to profit off something like that.
Right.
And, you know, Matt agrees, but, I mean, when you look at a situation like his college, kind of Wild Wild West, I don't think any coach is in favor of that.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's the thing, too. Like, you know, when we talk about marketing and all that, like, you know, one thing you got to give credit to, like, Colin, he's done a heck of a job with his social medias. And so, like, you know, that basically he's well-known throughout the LSU community because he committed there and he's, you know, he's all over, you know, socials. So, like, he's very well known to that. So, in a sense, if he can get an NIL deal, like when he goes to college, like, you know, at Raising Cane's, you know, mm-hmm. NIL deal gets, you know, some chicken fingers. You know, now in place, if they do set a rule, obviously he'd be gone. But for the next guys coming in, to be able to make something off your marketability and your name, you know, I can't hate on that. But there's also, I feel like, problems with it too.
Absolutely. You look at the college model.
The college model has been the wild, wild west, to where, you know, I think what's annoying about the college part too is the guys get a deal and then they either blow the money and then they go back to the coach and say, I want more. And they're like, dude, like, and especially these are almost for freshmen, the five-star kids who you're trying to pull in as a recruit. So you're trying to get this kid to come in, and so you throw the cash at him. And originally, I think NIL should have been built in, and I think was originated to be, let's give the benefit to the player already here who's actually produced on the field,
mm-hmm.
who's actually been in the program, not a high school kid that we're trying to lure to come here. And so,
and that's the inducements portion of it, which it was never supposed to be.
Exactly. It's for a guy it's for the linebacker who's leading tackler on the team 2 years in a row. He's a junior. Guess what? He's your best player on defense. He deserves that money. Not this five-star defensive tackle who's never played a down. Then he goes there and ends up being a bust, and then you pay him, you know, his $500K to $1 million. Doesn't play, and he's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm transferring. And then he'll be like, who's going to give me the next deal? All right, you're going to come. You're going to leave Texas A&M? You want to come to Georgia, USC? All right, we'll pay you. You know, and that's basically just chasing the bag wherever you go. And like that's the part of it. It's like, you know, this is not what it was intended for.
Right.
You know, but you're going to – kids and parents are always going to find loopholes to figure things out, to just be, you know, chasing the money.
Yeah, and I was interested, though, because in our survey, and we'll publish that on Friday, but interesting to see that how the gap closed. You know, the players were more passionate, and it was a closer vote actually than it had been in quite some time. And I remember when I started this about 10 years ago, it was a scholarship enough, or should players earn more?
Right.
It was overwhelmingly no, a scholarship is plenty enough. And now it's kind of tilted towards the other way, where NIL, yeah, absolutely, pay us. But I thought this year, to me, the absolutely definitive yes was far less than it was in the past, and the no's were quite a bit more strong. But the coaches this year, when I asked this last year to coaches and the year before, you know, coaches were unabashedly opposed to it, almost overwhelmingly.
Right.
And this year, it's within a couple votes of yes and no, which I thought was interesting. And I think coaches, as they're looking at it more and seeing, you know, the realisticness of this coming to the high school level.
The whole other part about that, too, is you think about it, all right, you know, if you're a coach, like I'll use Trinity and V-Man again, you know, like – and Colin or whoever, like Tramell at, you know, Mandarin, Jamie French. Like, these guys are studs, so they're gaining the attention to be that guy that, like, they have this name, image, likeness. You know, they're big-time commits at schools. You know, so they're bringing the attention not only to themselves, but it's still a part of your school and your, you know. And so, like, anytime that Colin or Tramell or Jamie do something, it gets attention to Mandarin and Trinity and everywhere. So it's the whole, like, that's where you got to figure out, like, that fine line of, like, okay, yes, this guy deserves this. Yes, he deserves to be profitable for himself, you know. But then also, you know, to be like, hey, you still got to play ball, and don't let this distract you, in a sense. You know, that's the hard part about it is, you know, don't let all this stuff, as now 17, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, like, this is another thing you're worrying about. Instead of just playing ball, you know, going to school and playing ball, now you're worried about all this stuff you got to do on social media and these appearances you have to make, or, you know, these endorsement deals you got, and you know, you haven't even gotten to college yet.
Yep.
So it's a lot of responsibility, and I think part of it is, you know, it's just the changing time of the world.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that'll be something worth monitoring. A couple of years ago, the Florida High School Athletic Association was actually sued in court to let athletes profit off their NIL, and that had still kind of been working its way through the court system. I think one of the cases was dropped because the kid actually was not in high school anymore. But again, that has been a smoldering topic for several years, and it looks like it's eventually going to come to Florida, as Georgia's a pretty good indicator. Will be interesting to see if it eventually comes to Texas, which is actually the Bible Belt of high school football, and it's still not approved there. But I think Florida will be the next domino to drop. Ron DeSantis's board, we don't have a read kind of on their you know intentions and where they kind of lean towards, but I would not be surprised to see NIL come to Florida here in the next 6 months or so. So that's interesting. Good to see Georgia being progressive again and a leader for high school athletics in this southern part of the country. Okay, week seven, we're going to fly through these pretty quickly. Not a great list of games this week, Sponge.
I
got a few picked out. Bishop Kenny at Pontevedra, that's it. That'll be a headliner. Bradford at Oak Leaf. Oak Leaf's lost two in a row. A little disappointing start. Riverside at Trinity Christian. And White at Fletcher, and then obviously IMG is coming to Bartram.
Yeah. Like we said, I don't think we need to break down IMG, Bartram. I mean, hopefully Bartram, you know, comes to play. IMG hadn't really played the major big dogs like they've had in the first. They're having a hard time getting games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last couple of years they've been playing the Modern Days and the Bishop Gormans and, you know, those.
Bishop Sycamores.
Yeah, the Bishop Sycamores, baby. But, yeah, so they haven't had that, like, killer slate, but, I mean, they're fully loaded with talent. So it's one of those, like, hey, how do you match up or how do you even compare to a team like this all-star team you're playing?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just hope you get something out of it. Don't get anybody hurt and just, you know, just take what you can from it, really, is all you can from that one.
Bishop Kenny, Pontevedra, a good one. Pontevedra's been on a tear since that loss to Bartram. Bishop Kenny, playoff team last year, district champ last year. That should be a good one.
Yeah, I think we talked about Pontevedra. They've been kind of sneaky good. You know, they had that first loss to a tight one to Bartram in that week one, and then they had the big win against Florida High. And then they've kind of had three games where they, you know, are better than the teams they played, and they showed it. They kind of waxed their next three opponents. So they've been rolling, you know, since the early part of the season. And I just feel like they've got more and they've got a little bit better than what Bishop Kenny's got.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about Reeser and, like, their offense, it hadn't been fully clicking either.
Yep.
You know, Bishop Kenny's, like, yeah, they've been winning some games, but I don't think they played anybody. And then the one team they did play in Bishop Moore out of Orlando, they lost that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Pontevedra in the game because I just like kind of like where they're trending and how they've been playing.
Yeah, same. Next one I like White Fletcher. It's a tough one here because both these teams have been tested this season. Fletcher's hot now. Fletcher's hot.
What's funny is when you look at that, they're both 4-2. So you're like, okay, if you would have thought about it, you know, right now and then kind of thought about what they did in the beginning of the year, they'd be like, are they 1-5? Like, how many wins they got? I feel like they've been losing or they haven't been playing good. But like you say, Fletcher's been hot. They haven't really been winning pretty, but like we said before, a win is a win. Just get out of there with a win. I think they've kind of found some things. They had some injuries. You know, Ed White had a tough one, obviously, week one against Trinity. Then they kind of got rolling a little bit. Then they lost that one to Riverside. I think they played well in that game. They just they moved the ball up and down the field. They just didn't score enough points.
Yep.
And then Riverside was able to, you know, got the big interception late in that game for like a 98-yard touchdown, a pick six. But, you know, slowly but surely their offense has been good. I still think they got more firepower with it, so I would probably pick Ed White to win this one. But like you say, Fletcher's been scrappy.
Yeah,
man.
They have.
They've been scrappy.
Riverside, Trinity Christian, can the Riverside Generals bounce back after that last one? And can Trinity play some consistent ball?
That's the big question there. You know, that's what we said. You know, Trinity kind of has been winning ugly. Their offense has been struggling. The one thing I will say, their defense has been playing well. You know, and they've been put in some tricky situations. They had to go on the road at, you know, Plantation down in American Heritage. You know, obviously they got put in major bad situations with five turnovers against Bowles, but they were able to – they didn't come up with the timely stop on that last drive, you know. But, you know, Rockledge, going back to that Rockledge game, like, Rockledge got a good defense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, watching that, it was a defensive slugfest, you know. So Trinity defensively has been bringing the mail, you know. So the big question is, can they get something established on offense?
Yes.
And you know, like, on the flip side, I feel like Riverside, they've been trying to work out their kinks. They haven't been lighting it up offensively either. They've been playing good D too. But, you know, the question is, can they score on Trinity's D? You know, and then, you know, obviously, you know, what is Colin going to do? Colin's got to take care of the ball better. You know, he's just completing about 50% of his passes. He's looked good and he's looked bad. You're just like, you can't throw into triple coverage and get, you know, throw pick six. You can't throw touchdowns to the other team. And like I say, sometimes you'll see a ball that he'll throw, you'll be like, what is he doing? And then the next two balls, you'd be like, good God, like that was on the money, perfect. So, like, he gives you those 2 to 3 to 4 plays where it's like, that's unstoppable.
It's so crazy to me because I had coaches last year and even a couple this year that have said, we want Colin to throw the ball. We think that's our best way to stop Trinity on defense. And that was, you know, last year was with Trayon or Darnell where you didn't want those guys to run the ball because Trayon was a bull back there.
For sure.
And then Darnell was such a good change of pace back.
That double-headed monster.
But Colin has just been so inconsistent. When you have coaches saying that about an LSU kid, it's like, what in the world? How in the world? What are you seeing that is making you say we would rather have an LSU quarterback commit, throw the ball? That's our best way of beating this team, which is just crazy to me that multiple coaches would say that. Our last one, Bradford Oakleaf. I think this game looked better on paper before the last couple weeks. Bradford is just smoking teams. Will Oakleaf score more than a touchdown?
Yeah, that's been the big question is, you know, Bradford's been shutting everybody down just like last year, not, you know, holding teams to zero and 7 points, you know, one single score game. And, you know, Oakleaf, like I say, they just kind of, you felt good about them, you know, early when they were the 2-0 going into that bowls game. And you're like, okay, look, this is going to be their gut check game. This is going to be their, where is Oakleaf at with Coach Foy in this first year? And, you know, Bowles took it to them. Bowles kind of found their way in that game. They found their way, you know, offensively against Trinity, but they were able to do whatever they wanted offensively, Bowles, you know, running and DJ throwing. So then you lose back-to-back. The question is, can Oakleaf's D muster up anything to kind of slow down Bradford to maybe keep it a low-scoring defensive game? But I still feel like the defense of Bradford will hold on, and I think, you know, they'll be able to score enough. And I think Bradford ultimately wins the game, and Oakleaf catches another L, man.
I agree. I think Bradford is just on another level right now. That is it for another edition of the Varsity Podcast, Week 7, coming to you on Friday night. For Sponge Franklin, Justin Barney, thanks for joining us for another week.